Welcome to Library Voices SC. This is Curtis Rogers, Communications Director at the South Carolina State Library. And Library Voices SC is the official podcast of the South Carolina State Library. And today I have an author with me, and it is Claire DeLune. And she is author of South Carolina Blues, which is part of the Images of America series by Arcadia Publishing. So welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here.
I'm excited.
This book, I went to our collection, and of course we had it in our collection.
Thank you.
So I was really excited, and I started looking through it, and it's just amazing. I love seeing all the images.
It was quite a feat to pull this together, and on the one hand, it was hard to get some of the images, because I think some people are really shy about sharing, and
sure,
they may have other reasons. They could just be busy. So, but I went through 20,000 images to get the,
jeez,
I can't remember, are there 208? I think there are 208 on,
wow,
128 pages. And that's a set thing in the book, 128 pages for these books, and they are primarily driven by the imagery. So the story unfolds in a way that isn't along a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderfully flowing river that just can change and go another direction. I had a different idea for it when I started than what it turned out to be. And for a while, I was resisting the current.
Mm-hmm.
I was resisting that tide. And finally, when I rolled with the tide, not to make a non-South Carolina reference there, but when I floated along the river,
uh-huh,
downstream from upcountry South Carolina all the way through the Midlands and all the way down to the Lowcountry, I found that it really directed itself and fell into some really neat aspects, and I was very fortunate and got down to about 600 photos, and I had to leave that to the editors, which,
yeah,
ones to choose.
Yeah, well, let's backtrack a little bit. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your interest in South Carolina's blues history.
I'm an adoptee of the state and a proud person who, as another friend of mine often says, I'm not a native, but I got here as quick as I could. And I have been really thrilled with the feeling of home because I was an Army brat and traveled around and never really had a home, and I really have a sense of home in South Carolina. So one of the things I did as a person who taught music history at the college level was try and invent courses that had not been done before. And so I was the first person to teach blues history at USC, first person to teach rock and roll history at USC, women in popular music, the 20th century, jump swing and boogie-woogie music. And then a few years later, I decided music of the Carolinas would be fun. So what we did is we did a western sweep of the Piedmont and Mountains. I'm sorry, the mountains and, mm-hmm, western side. More mountains in North Carolina, obviously.
Mm.
But we have some in South Carolina, and that was bluegrass-oriented. And the other third of the course was Piedmont, and that was naturally blues-oriented. We have to give a nod to Bruce Baston, an author of great renown who saved my ashes in this book one day. And then the eastern side was broken into beach music. But we also decided to do a little Gullah,
mm-hmm,
Geechee, and because I needed a third matching G, garage. So, uh-oh, we did some early rock and roll, you know, the Sparkle Tones and that sort of thing,
mm-hmm,
doing black slacks. So we had fun with that, but there was no book. And everyone kept saying, oh, well, you need to write it. So I innocently had no idea what goes into making a book.
Especially one that is visual.
And it
is
goes back
images.
500 years, too.
Yeah.
So I said, okay. And I did it. And it took, they give you a year, and I took three.
Wow.
It took a while. So we had fun with it, though. And it is by far one, it's like a child.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really am proud of it, and I'm glad to be able to go out and talk about it now, and the pain of having it emerge into,
right,
the world has been largely forgotten. Not so much that I'm doing a second one yet, but I've actually considered a follow-up.
Okay, All right. Well, tell us a little bit about some of your other endeavors before we kind of delve into this. I know you've had a long-run radio show at 90.5.
I love WUSC 90.5 FM Columbia. And I had obviously been working at the university, and my students would come in and we'd have chats about music. And one of my students was the director of the station, and he said, "You got to come down." I said, "I don't want to be the old person at the station." And he said, "Oh, we've got one person older." I said, "Oh, that's good." So I went and did that and got over my – it was very hard to do because I would get tongue-tied and gibberish. And it was very hard, but it was a good thing to do, and it – I had a lot of blues knowledge because I grew up listening to blues from about the age of four, and I don't know why, but...
Well, somebody had to have influenced that.
My mother's aunt...
Because not many four-year-olds try to find blues.
No, but I listened to the radio, and I liked what was on the blues stations that I would... And my parents left me to my own devices a lot. So, but my aunt had a record store, and she sent us about 10 records a week. They were the 10 top-selling records, and it was an urban store, and that had one side. This was in the days when it was segregated, and one door went in, and that side was, you know, but everybody paid at the same counter.
Okay.
Counter had two sides to it. So she didn't keep track. She didn't care. She just took the top 10 sales and popped them in, and so I'd get Paul Anka's "Put Your Head on My Shoulders" along with John Lee Hooker's "Boom Boom." That's my favorite.
Wow.
That's my favorite combination of what I got. It's like, well, this is different. And I just tended to like that. And I really loved Elvis, who got, if not all, he got most of his influence from R&B artists. So it kind of happened the same way. And I, as a four-year-old, my parents would have me come out and entertain at parties because I could do an Elvis impression. That was pretty rocking.
That's great.
But, you know, so that's where it started. And then I was always a geek, so I wanted to find out more. And I read the back of the albums and, you know, bought music history books such as they were at the time. There weren't very many. It wasn't like we have it now with the Internet. Wow.
Right. And everything is digital. Well, tell folks who maybe haven't seen the book or want to know more about the book how it's organized. I notice you've got different sections here. How did you decide to organize it that way?
That was a really hard, hard decision. But I started with the roots of blues in South Carolina, then the early years. And the roots of blues, obviously, are from those harsh times where we go back to all the way back to Africa for that. And the early years of blues is how it evolved differently than in, say, Mississippi. How is our blues different than Mississippi's blues?
Okay.
And why? And so there are some interesting reasons for that. In those days, geographical changes were very different and how people were influenced in terms of us having a very active port rather than Mississippi being more insular and having the river. But we had a port that brought people from Europe, so our style has much more European, it's much more Eurocentric, and is much more tied to, say, bluegrass, which emerged only 50 years ago. Well, more like 75 now. But mid-century to modern blues, obviously, is when R&B turned into rock and roll, and those roots happened, and then modern blues in South Carolina. And then I decided there were so many connections that people had to South Carolina that weren't from here. We needed one. It was just people not from here that had played a role that I thought was worth mentioning, and those are external influences on blues in South Carolina. Then just people and places and remembrances. So that was where I... The publisher doesn't generally like a lot of ticket stubs or things like that, but I have, for example, Drink Small's handwritten lyrics to Geraldine, which is his guitar, and I have a set of stamps that the U.S. Postal Service put out that features three Carolinians, three people, well, Leadbelly, who wrote Winsboro Mill Blues, and Sonny Terry, who's from North Carolina, then Josh White from South Carolina, and Woody Guthrie, who partnered with Josh White and Leadbelly. So there are all these connections, you know, just different things, top 60 music and ticket stubs and posters and things like that are in the end.
Well,
and I had to really narrow that down. That was just so hard to do. It was like saying, you don't get to be in the book.
Well, as I was looking through the book, and you know, it is amazing how over time you're looking at the changes in race relations, you know, because you're looking at a lot of the history of music through race, especially when you're talking about blues. And so I started flipping through, and some of these folks I'd love for you to talk about just a little bit. And I think, you know, sometimes people generally don't know that certain people are from South Carolina, like Eartha Kitt. I mean, you know, a lot of people may not realize that she was from South Carolina.
It is, there were so many people like that in the book that we just did not carry an awareness. It's not talked about. There was an Eartha Kitt Day a couple of years ago started, and her daughter came.
Oh, wow.
But sad that we didn't do that while Eartha Kitt could come and be honored. And,
right.
And, you know, I'm not sure whether everybody who came from here, Viola Davis, for example, not a singer but an actor, she was born in South Carolina, raised elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure she maintains a giant-sized tie to the state that of her birth. Mm-hmm. Eartha Kitt was born in North South Carolina, which makes everybody
right.
laugh. And it's not even in the north part, which
That's
is
right.
the part that confuses me the most.
Isn't it in Orangeburg?
It's
County?
Right near Orangeburg. And but she was called the most exciting woman in the world by Orson Welles. And that particularly shows, as I write in the book, the dichotomy of class distinction. Mm-hmm. She was held in such high regard in Hollywood. And yet she was made to sit in the back of the bus. And there's a picture in the book of her sitting in the back of a bus with a beautiful fox stole, which was the fashion at the time. I know that's out of fashion now, but that was the pinnacle of fashion, and a beautiful floral headdress. And I mean, the woman is just drop dead gorgeous. And she was the original Catwoman on the Batman television series in the mid-60s. But if you go back and Google and watch a series of her songs on YouTube, you will get an admiration for her.
Oh, yeah, the way she held herself, everything about
her. Just her voice, her style, her control. And she's much more than what she's remembered for now, which is basically Santa Baby.
Mm-hmm.
Every Christmas we hear that one, and it's a fabulous song. But she does this one called I'm Evil with that croaky voice of hers. She's fabulous. She's just amazing and so proud that she – and I can tell you that I hope that North will continue to do a tribute annually to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the other names that you mentioned just a few minutes ago was Woody Guthrie.
Mm-hmm. Now, he partnered up. He was big on social injustice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that comes as a shock to anyone. Mm-hmm. But he was a partner in his life with Leadbelly, who's not from South Carolina, but he has a special thing that I think is interesting. He was jailed twice for killing someone, once in Texas, and then a different guy in Louisiana.
Hmm.
Different reasons for each. We don't have time to go into that. But he was in jail and pardoned twice by two different governors for his song ability. Seriously.
Wow.
You know, that's a pretty good way to get out of jail. And then to go back a second time and have it happen again is phenomenal.
But do you think it was so that he could get that true experience to be able to play the blues while he was in jail?
No. His side of the story is that he and his friend were attacked going through after drinking, going home, they were going through, and a guy whose girl Leadbelly had been flirting with came after him with a knife, and so that was a fight, and Leadbelly was a big guy, so pow-pow, you know, one guy vanquished. Now, right, wrong, or indifferent, he went to jail. That was Texas, and then he was let out of jail, and he's going home and passing his old daddy's share car. Now, his daddy walked from Louisiana, where he's from, to Texas to bring the guitar, P.S. Wow. That was a dedicated father. And so they were walking back through. He was going through Louisiana and passing his old homestead sharecropper farm, and he looked over at the farm. It was then owned by poor white people. I don't recollect every detail of the story right because I didn't refresh on it, but I think there was a young lady on the porch, and the two guys that saw him looking got the wrong idea, came in, and so once again Leadbelly killed. But they assaulted him, is his story, and then he just defended himself. But one of them, at least one of them, died, and so he went back to jail. But then he got let out again for his musical abilities. Governor Pat Neff let him out. And so, I can't remember if he was the Texas or Louisiana one, but anyway. So, Leadbelly was considered to have been wronged by a lot of people. You know, he had served time that he shouldn't have had, you know, self-defense both times. In his opinion, I don't know, wasn't there, not judging, just saying that, that he was taken in by the group of people who wanted to see him have a better life. And along with that, Josh White, who was a little younger, but he was from South Carolina in the upstate, and his mama, when he went off to play music, she said, now don't you play anything but gospel. And he promised her that he, Josh White, would not play anything but gospel. So you go look at his aliases and see what music he did. He never wanted to embarrass his mama. But he made more money with the little bawdier songs.
Okay.
Yeah, so that put money in his pocket. So one could say that he was keeping his promise, or one could say that he was lying by omission. Again, not here to judge. That's just a fact of life. And so he went up to New York and Washington. He made friends with President Roosevelt and his wife.
Wow.
You might have heard of her. And she was a big social injustice fighter. And Eleanor Roosevelt was part of the power behind the United Nations Bill of Rights for Humans. I may not be saying that name correctly, but it's basically saying standards that if you go read it today, you will say those are the standards we need to employ today. It's very good human equality treatment for all, fits the Constitution, you know, that sort of thing. So he was an advisor on that issue and then got blackballed for it. He was the first black person to be entertained in the White House.
Wow.
Yeah, entertained, not entertain others. He was a guest.
Wow.
Honored guest. So his son is Josh White Jr. Recommend people look into him because he is over in Europe. He lives his life in Europe for a reason. And he is a performer as well. So check him out. But that is South Carolina, and that is our connection to Woody Guthrie and all those social injustice things. And Josh White was considered the, he predated Elvis, but he was the Elvis of his day. He was so popular. And now you almost don't hear of him because that blackballing had such an effect on his career. He was the first black person entertainer to get a signature instrument named after him. Ovation gave him a named guitar, the Josh White guitar. So he was really up there and took quite a fall in stature for saying what was on his mind at a time when it could get you lynched to do it.
Oh, sure.
Very and proud of him.
Yeah. It, it's always difficult, you know, when you have all these the social injustices and, you know, how you are able to respond and how people react to that response. And you know, it's very tricky. One of the other individuals who is from Bishopville, South Carolina, is a name I think a lot of people might have heard when we're talking about this genre of music is Drink Small.
Yes, and Drink is still playing. He's going to be, he's just made an appearance at the 21st Camden Festival.
How old is
he? He is 84, 85 okay. range, and he was born in Bishopville, South Carolina. He had a single mother. He loved his mom and lived in a, he's another that came from a family of sharecroppers. And he learned guitar from a man whose name was Greenback. And he was run over by a heavily laden mule-drawn wagon as a child, and that hurt his back terribly. And he knew that from an early age he wanted to play music. So he got in a group of singing a cappella group in high school, and he was the bass voice, because nobody can go low like Drink. I mean, that voice will go into the lower registers, and he became a member of the Spiritual Heirs, and he was he appeared at the Apollo and with Staple Singers and Pop Staples, and Sister Rosetta Tharpe came through town and was so impressed with him, she wanted to take him on tour. He does not love travel, so in the younger days he would go by car, but he will not go overseas in a plane. I don't think he's ever been in a plane.
Wow.
And that hampered the spread of the gospel of Drink Small.
Sure.
But he has been performing. So he went to school to become a barber, and then he went to school for accounting at the technical systems in South Carolina. And he decided that he could either do that or he could play music. And he decided to devote himself to music full time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he's done ever since. And he was nominated by a number of people. I was approached to write the nomination letter for him by the South Carolina Arts Commission.
Wow.
And we put him up for the National Heritage Fellow Award from the National Endowment for the Arts, and he was named that in 2015.
Okay.
And that is the top honor.
Wow.
In case you're like me and didn't know at the time, that's the top honor in the country. I knew it was good, I just didn't know it was the pinnacle.
That's amazing.
I'd have been scared to write the letter. So it's a good thing I didn't know. But he got that, and he is only the fifth South Carolinian to be chosen.
Wow.
Ever.
That's impressive.
And that's not just singers. That's basketry. That's any type. That's native dance. That's any type of artistry. So kind of.
That's a very,
it's an outstanding honor that he has bestowed on South Carolina.
Sure.
You know, it
sure.
was bestowed upon him, too.
Right.
He earned it, but he gifted us with that awareness, and it really did raise awareness of South Carolina and blues and what we're doing here.
Well, there are some amazing things going on.
Mm-hmm.
As I was flipping through, I see this picture, and this is a great picture, and it's, you know, one of those classic pictures. He's standing there, one leg up on the stage, and he's got this, you know, face that only he has, and it's James Brown.
Oh, James Brown. One thing that, first of all, I think you and me and every other child of our age range saw him on various TV shows, and he was riveting.
Oh, yeah.
Riveting, that dancing.
Such charisma.
Oh, my gosh, just loved it, the music. Mm-hmm. I have to say that my mother, for being out of touch with a lot of what my generation was doing, my mother was so darling, and she would come in my room and I didn't understand what a cover song was at that point, but she would come in my room, and if a band was doing a song, she'd go, "Oh, now this was a piece we used to enjoy when I was a girl." And I'd go, "We don't care, Mother.
Right.
You're embarrassing me.
Right.
Please go." She was actually a jitterbug champ, so she knew music.
Oh, wow.
But she was hip enough to go get info from her aunt, my great aunt, with the record store. And on my 12th Christmas, there was Papa's Got a Brand New Bag, not the 45, which is usually what I could afford, the entire album.
Wow.
Oh my God. I got that and Rubber Soul that Christmas. That made my life complete, I'm telling you. That and a Barbie outfit and my complete music and nerddom was assured. But he has obviously got talent galore, and so many of our South Carolina artists were mm-hmm. part of his entourage. Mm-hmm. He reached out to people he knew. And he started out, interestingly enough, traveling up. I think his first band was with Mac Arnold, who's also in the book. Mac Arnold, who played with Muddy Waters, mm-hmm. and then was also the music director for Soul Train for many years.
Okay.
Well, so his first job was James Brown's boss in the band. Hello. Who knew? And that was a fun fact to discover. Also, a more tragic fact about James Brown was he was born to a very young teenage mom and a young dad, mm-hmm. too. And they couldn't take care of him. So he grew up in around the Williston, Elko area of Barnwell County. Okay. He grew up in a his aunt's brothel.
Mm.
Yeah. So that was, you know, interesting mm-hmm. to know that that had an effect. That had to have an effect on his life. And I did meet James Brown. He came in when I was working at the university. He came in a building I was in and asked for directions
really?
To the courthouse, of all things. He was going to the courthouse. He and his wife were dressed in full-length white fur coats. It was not cold outside. They were in a stretch, full, if more than full-length limo.
Uh-huh.
And they had come in the little small horseshoe on Bull
uh-huh.
and came into the main administration building at the university. And he wanted to know if that was the courthouse. And I uh-huh. said, ooh. Badia, badia, badia. I mean, I was like
sure.
just gobsmacked. And I said, well, no, sir. Actually, you have to just turn the car around. And if you, you know, and told mm-hmm. him where it was.
Yep.
It was a couple blocks. And he reached in his pocket for something. And hundreds of dollar bills came flying out. And, of course, what I should have done is grab one and asked him to sign it.
Uh-huh.
I was still too gobsmacked. And I handed them back to him. He stuffed them back in his pocket. Later come to find out he was on his way to his bankruptcy hearing.
Oh, my goodness.
Boy, I wish I had known. I would have said, shed that.
Right.
Walk from here.
Yeah, exactly.
Leave me the,
work up
leave,
the sweat.
Put the coats here. don't go dressed in full-length fur to say you're broke
yeah.
and have money flying out the pocket. So that was one of what I call God's gifts of very special humor.
That's a great story.
You know, it sounds like I would make that up, but no, it actually happened, and I have a witness.
Looking through the book, you've got some other interesting images. And this one, I noticed it because this is a local record store, Papa Jazz
oh,
Record Shop.
Oh, we love Papa Jazz. Matter of fact, I'm going there right after this interview. And I tell you what, they have been great supporters of WUSC, where I have my radio show, and they were such help when I was trying to find material to pull the book together, and they're always fabulous. But Papa Jazz may have jazz in the name, but they're
they
very bluesy
too,
and they have
everything.
So, yeah. But I knew the original owner, and then
how long has it been around?
Yeah.
Been around a long
early
time.
Early 80s, mm-hmm. right?
I think so.
Late 70s, early 80s, somewhere in there. Yeah. And Rich, I think, was the original guy's name. I've lost touch, and my memory isn't what it used to be. But I remember just having to basically handcuff myself not to go down there and spend my whole paycheck.
Yeah.
Because I'm bad about that.
You can get lost in there.
Yeah. If they get a new blues shipment in, you want to go before I get there.
That's great. Well, tell folks how they can get a copy of this book.
Oh, well, you know.
I mean, of course, they can go to their local library and check out a book, but if they
wanted
want to
that.
Buy one.
Oh, we don't want that. No. No. This is a fabulous book on three levels, in my opinion, as the not-so-humble author of it. It sounds horrible to say, but I think it makes a great gift for anybody who likes South Carolina
mm-hmm.
or history
mm-hmm.
or music. It is a history that talks about things that you would not know otherwise. There are pictures that I have unearthed or taken through my years that you're not going to find anywhere else. Mm-hmm. I think when people do books like this, a lot of times they go through photos that are available to everyone. These are not.
Right.
These majority of these have never been published before. They came out of private collections, mm-hmm. or they came out of some dusty, crusty mm-hmm. vault somewhere and haven't been seen in 40 or 50 years. So I would say this needs to be on every South Carolinian's bookshelf. If you don't have a bookshelf, go out and get one.
Get a bookshelf. You can add this to it.
And get yourself a set of books about South Carolina. But it's also, anybody who loves blues ought to have it. And, you know, you can get it from the publisher. You can get it on, obviously, Amazon or the other outlets. Mm-hmm. You can get it from the author. And I'm at bluesmoonradio@gmail.com. And that's blues, not blue moon, but bluesmoonradio@gmail.com. And
great.
You can get a signed copy there.
Oh, cool.
And I will arrange it. So it's and they make great gifts for others. It's an awesome gift to give a signed book.
Well, the thing is that, I mean, it's so visually appealing. You know, you don't necessarily think of these kinds of books that really are surveying a topic, you know, in the state as being visual, but this, it really is, and it explains.
It's such a wide range of mm-hmm. it's texturally attractive and keeps your interest. It's not just here's a building, here's a building, here's a building, here's a building.
Right, yep. These are a lot of the people who have really influenced South Carolina.
And some fun offshoots. I think I kind of went into the blues, bass, rock and roll for a few minutes there and picked a few bands that I thought stood out in that regard.
Uh-huh.
And gosh, we've got LGB, who's a soul singer, but she sent me a picture of herself as a child and also one in mid-childhood where her family's standing around making Thanksgiving. So you get a peek into their lives, you
yeah,
know.
This definitely.
isn't just a collection. There are some obviously promo photos, but it's not just
sure.
a collection of promo photos.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating. It's a great addition to personal libraries and public libraries and academic libraries. So we certainly appreciate you talking about South Carolina blues with us.
Thank you.
We will have links to all your information on our podcast website.
Good. Well, I appreciate being here, and it's been a joy to do the book and to enjoy the opportunities to talk about it, too. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
We love what you do.
Thank you.